words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts always be acceptable in thy sight. O Lord, our strength and our redeemer.
Amen.
Have you ever had anybody say to you, oh, you're running around like a chicken, head chopped off?
That strikes a bell, doesn't it?
What does that mean?
on the treadmill, running, trying to do things, okay?
I'm not going to go into what they do on the farm. I had it here, but I'm not going to go into it because it gets a little gory. And really, I don't really know other than what I've never really seen it done, but people have told me. So you know what I'm talking about. We've all had times when we have had 3 days worth of chores, errands, deadlines, responsibilities to finish in 1 day's time. As surely as that axe chop, such a day can transform us into frantically flapping headless chickens. But what happens when the headless chicken syndrome begins to be our natural normal state? Consider the plight of this famous fowl from Fruita, Colorado. This is a true story. In the 1940s, Fruita, Colorado farmer Lloyd Olson, sounds like he should be from Minnesota, decided he was hungry for chicken soup. So he lopped off the head of a rooster at the base of his skull, leaving as much of the tasty neck as possible. So if you bear with some of this gory stuff. But instead of falling over dead, the rooster fluffed up his feathers over his headless neck and went through the motions of pecking for food. His only crow was a gurgle. The next morning, the rooster was still alive. So Farmer Olson started putting feed and water directly into Mike's gullet with an eyedropper. When the headless rooster, now named Mike, the town of Fruita, 6,000 people named him Mike, was still alive the next week, Olson took him to the University of Utah scientists. After examining him in depth, they were just perplexed. They concluded that Mike had enough of a brain stem left to live headless. Mike then went on the circuit as a sideshow until he choked to death on a kernel of corn in an Arizona motel 18 months after his head was chopped off. This is true. Mike made it into Life magazine and the Guinness Book of Records. Every year on May 19th and 20th, if you go there today, there is a Mike the Headless Chicken Festival in Fruita, Colorado. I suppose if you had nothing else to boast about. Anyone here identify with Mike? Anyone not identify? The truth of the matter is this. For you and me, our stressed out, multiple interface, super mom, super dad, super kid, and sometimes super person lifestyles threatens to turn all of us into perpetual headless chickens. Like Mike, we're often out of control. Like Mike, we've lost our primary guidance system, our radar. And like Mike, the headless chicken, we don't even know it. Back in the late 60s, William Birnbaum came up with the concept of the overlive factor. So think of this, overlive. He defined overlive as the non-military counterpart of overkill, a surplus living power expressed in the ratio between the capacity of the country to produce in the fulfillment of the promises it makes to all of its people and what it actually produces and does with its greatest power. Birnbaum went on to contend that we have created an overlived society, a country in which a substantial number of citizens do not share in the technological and industrial successes, which is there for all to see, and which many of those who do fail to discover any meaning in success. Now, in the years since Birnbaum christened the overlive syndrome, our culture has only shifted into higher gears. So here we were 30 years ago. Now we're into another level. We wallow in overlife living. Maybe some of you are thinking, I don't know if I agree with him. Have any doubts? How many channels does your television receive? I think ours is 200, 300. I mean, it's unbelievable. How many websites can you get on Google, on the internet? How many computers do you own? Some have a computer with them at work, with them in the car. Don't forget the ones in the cars and the appliances. How many calories do you consume? How many jobs and titles do you hold? How many families are you a part of? How many rooms overflowing with stuff do you have? I was talking to this one woman at a convention yesterday. She's leaving a 4,000, 5,000 square foot home in Sedona, Arizona, and she's moving to Wisconsin, and she's going in a one-bedroom apartment.
No.
So I said, well, how did the paring down go? Hell. Hell. How many catalogs, I don't know about you, but I think we have catalog heaven in the mail. How many catalogs come in the mail each day to tantalize you into getting even more and more? It's not that a lot of our overliving isn't undertaken with the best of intentions. Then again, we all know what that infamous road to hell is paved with, don't we? It's paved with kudzu. Never knew about this. Those of you who may have lived in the South, especially the southeastern part of the states, know about kudzu. It's a lovely leafy green vine, and it climbs and twists with gusto. So much gusto, in fact, that this green monster is about ready to strangle the entire countryside. Kudzu was introduced to American farmers at the 1876 Centennial Exposition in Philadelphia. Brought over from Japan, the kudzu vine was supposed to provide farmers with a rapid-growing forage crop for livestock, while its ivy-like gripping creepers promised to help control soil erosion. What's that saying? If something seems to be too good to be true, it probably is. So what they did in the Southeast, farmers started happily planting this too-good-to-be-true kudzu and began to reap its benefits. But kudzu proved to be too much of a good thing. With no natural predators to control its spread and ideal growing conditions, the kudzu vine exploded into an overwhelming abundance of overlife all across the South. Agriculturalists now estimate that kudzu covers about 7 million acres, and it is continuing to spread its leafy arms across the midsection of the country. So this is what it does. It chokes out native plants, shrubs, grasses. It even strangles whole forests of trees. Kudzu vines swallow entire buildings in a single growing season. And like livestock, don't seem to like it either. Frustrated farmers, landscapers, and backyard gardeners hack away at this pernicious plant with little effect. On steamy southern days, and it gets hot, some of you know, and warm nights, the kudzu vine can add another 6 inches to a vital vine in 24 hours. The USDA, Department of Agriculture, statistics show that kudzu spreads over 120,000 acres a year and estimates that losses as a result of trying to curtail or contain this growth are about to reach $360 million annually. Just to control the kudzu. All because the kudzu vine is overwhelming its environment with its overlife. Our own overliving can be traced back to similar good intentions, even as it can be traced forward towards similarly disastrous results. Think about these things. We want our kids to have the best opportunities possible, so we overindulge. We want to make sure we are informed and responsible, so we overprocess, overanalyze, and oversubscribe. We want to be the brightest, the most desired, so we overachieve and overreach the top. We want to have it all, So we overeat and overdrink and oversmoke and end up with our lives, our overlived diseases such as addictions, cancers, heart disease, high blood pressure, and diabetes. In James's epistle this morning, James pointedly attacks the root cause behind the disorder and wickedness that seems to sneak into all of our human relationships. We don't bicker and fight because of great philosophical differences. James insists that it is our own selfish personal desires, what he calls a war within, that creates the conflicts in our families and communities and in ourselves. Many of us want more. More attention, more respect, more power, more authority. And our wanting butts up against those same wants within our own family, church, community, and country. The result is kudzu, disorder and wickedness of every kind, the overkill that attends over life. I'll tell you this story in closing here. Greg Morris tells this story to help us come to terms with the need for balance in our life and ministries. Ellen Lombard of Fairmont, New York, manufactures 4 varieties of horseradish. Got that? Hot, extra hot, XXX hot, and too darn hot. She accidentally spilled a quart and a half bottle of her secret spice ingredient in her basement. Somehow kicked it over. She plugged in a fan to try to air out the room, but the overwhelming vapors forced her out. She called 911, but when the firefighters arrived, they were too overwhelmed, even with their masks. They couldn't deal with it. So the Onondaga County Hazardous Materials Unit was called to clean up the spill. The fire chief later explained that isothiocyanate, the liquid spice, is dangerous if inhaled in large amounts. Just as even the finest spice can be overwhelming in large doses, Morris concludes, life too can seem overwhelming when things get out of balance. Our lust for overliving can even lead us to death. You've all seen Big Brother, the show Big Brother, and how they watch these people for 24 hours. The survivor of This In Your Face on the camera marathon came a millionaire. This is one of their episodes. The overwhelming success of Big Brother and Survivor has encouraged one Hollywood mogul to suggest another short series that goes yet more over the top. His idea, this is unbelievable, get 10 volunteers in a doomed plane with only 9 parachutes. One will die. The other 9 will jump to safety and become millionaires. Who wants to be a millionaire now? According to the Hollywood mogul, he would have no trouble finding 10 volunteers willing to risk being that one who goes down with the plane in order to gain the notoriety, the fame, and the wealth. What do you think? Is he right? Are there people who would volunteer to bet their life for $1 million? Are there people who would bankroll such an immoral, outrageous overkill? Are there audiences of people who would sit glued to their televisions and computer monitors waiting to see the results of such a contest? Of course there are. For the natural progression of overlife is not towards more life, but towards death. The overlived life hides an underlived soul. God's design and dream for you and me is an abundant life, not an overlife. God never scrimps or plays stingy with the grace that is offered us on this path to this divinely promised abundance. Who can look at Christ on the cross and accuse God of playing too close to the vest? Christ's sacrifice is complete. The resurrection boasts God's love at its most extreme and extravagant. Abundant life is gifted to you and me in full. But to receive this gift, we must first approach God humbly. Only when we can approach with humility the wonders and wisdom of life, in James, he reminds us, will we know genuine fulfillment and satisfaction. This Steve Kirsch, he has this high-tech company with his wife. and he established a $90 million philanthropic foundation. And he was dedicated to getting internet millionaires to give. And this is the argument he used. A lot of people are worth a lot more than you are. And it's a lot less competitive to be on the list of the biggest givers in Silicon Valley than on the list of the wealthiest people in Silicon Valley. So why not compete where you can be in the top 10? Interesting approach. You might not be a Silicon Valley or Sun Valley zillionaire, none of us are, but everyone can find practical ways to tame the overlife into an abundant life. There is even one woman who's trying to make a case for the benefits of kudzu. She's found a multitude of practical uses for the overwhelming plan. She uses it in recipes like kudzu frittata, or weaving the tough but pliant leaves into hats, baskets, and placemats. But more importantly, what's your level of peace, contentment, and satisfaction in your life? You and I need to live into the abundant life. The abundant life is a challenge to our faith to live contrary to the pop culture, to the world message of overlife. It's our call to resist the fears which make us want to pull in our horns and withhold our time and treasure from others. It's our call to remember that all things come from God and that God will provide all we need when we are generous with each other and the world. It is trusting that abundant life is freedom and liberation in Christ instead of the acquisition of worldly goods and earthly power. It's knowing that when we gather in community for the common purpose of serving others, we can do so because of the power of the risen Christ. We discover abundant life whenever we extend it to others. So what I'd like you to do, and myself, slow down. Slow down. Take some time, 3 minutes, 5 minutes. Pray to the Holy One, who really will give you and me abundant life, that source of peace and fulfillment and contentment that the world cannot give us.